Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning. It's Thursday, September 18th, and I got a question for you, John. How much money do you think that Hollywood has made over the decades with movies about the afterlife and out-of-body experiences and near-death experiences?
Well, there was Ghost and...
Ghosts and spirits and...
I see dead people. Oh, there's one now. There's one. Yes.
Well, we're obsessed. There is an obsession that exists, a human obsession with the afterlife and what it means. And essentially all scientists have to go on are stories that people report when they do get close to death and come back. So-called out-of-body experiences. Well, right now, a United Kingdom university is trying to find out what exactly happens with death or in death by carrying out the world's largest scientific study into near-death experiences. And joining me now to explain what all of this means is the leader of the study, Dr. Sam Parnia. Good morning, or I should say good afternoon for you, Dr. Parnia. Explain what this study is about exactly.
Well, this is the largest ever study which aims to determine what happens to the human mind and consciousness during clinical death. And it's an important study because we certainly know biologically what happens to the body when we're going through death. We know that we define death when the heart stops beating, people stop breathing, and the brain also shuts down as a consequence of a lack of blood flow. But then a big question arises is, well, at what point does the human mind and consciousness cease functioning? Is it at the moment the heart stops beating? Is it a few seconds later? Is it a few minutes later? Or is it even hours later? And we certainly don't know. What's really led to this study is the observation that all our data from people who've gone through clinical deaths show that the brain no longer functions because there is no blood flowing into it. Yet paradoxically, 10 to 20% of people who have gone through clinical death and are brought back to life will report some kind of activity of their mind and consciousness. And so the question is, you know, are these real? Do people really have continuation of consciousness when they're going through death? Or is this just an illusion? It's something that they think really happened but didn't really happen to them.
It's those stories that we hear of people saying they felt like they were in a tunnel, that there was a bright light, that they had contact potentially with other people they knew who were deceased. I mean, this has been a very common story that you've heard from many parts of the world in those near-death experiences.
Yes, you've pointed out something very absolutely correct, that these experiences have been reported from all over the world and from all different age groups, even children less than 3 years old. The key, though, is that a lot of what people describe is very personal. It's subjective. They may say they saw a tunnel or a light or deceased relatives, and we have no way scientifically of validating these. We cannot tell whether they're real or not, and that's why there's a lot of debate about them. However, there are some people, a proportion of them, who will describe being able to watch doctors and nurses working on them in specific detail. And they'll tell us, for example, Dr. Smith walked into the room. As he saw me laying there, he ran across the bed. He hit a bucket of instruments. Everything fell to the ground. He started frantically pressing on my chest. And I was watching everything from above, and I was perfectly peaceful and comfortable. And that's the component that can be validated and tested scientifically, and that's what we're interested in.
And how do you do that exactly?
Well, the only way to really put an end to this whole debate of whether these are real or illusions is to use an objective marker, and that's how we have to do it scientifically. So what we've done in the first instance, we have, as you may have known, we've recruited 25 major medical centers in the UK and the United States to do this study. And what we've done is we've pre-installed the areas in the hospitals where we think we're more likely to have people have a cardiac arrest. So in other words, say the coronary care unit, the emergency areas, with images that are only
visible.
Come on
over here. Just come on over here to the studio.
I'll come over. Maybe my own studio, yeah. Too. You might give me half one. Yeah. So what we do is we put pictures that are only visible from the ceiling and nowhere else. So they're about 6'7" from the ground. And the idea is very simple. If we get, say, 300 people as part of this study who have these so-called out-of-body experiences, they claim they could watch doctors and nurses working at them from the ceiling. Well, then in theory, they should also be able to see these pictures. Now, if nobody comes back and has seen the picture that was up there, then that simply confirms that this is a false memory, it's an illusion. If, on the other hand, somehow, and we have no explanation for why this should happen, but if somehow they do come back and they can all see the pictures that are there, then that's very significant, and it means that the mind being the mystery that it is, we've added an extra level of mystery that maybe the mind and consciousness can even separate from the brain and continue to function when the brain is no longer working.
Well, ultimately, do you suspect that this will give you a portrait of the last moments of consciousness, or will it, on the other hand, deliver a portrait of some netherworld between life and death that is part consciousness and part something else?
Well, you see, although 50 or 100 years ago, when somebody died, there was no point even debating what would happen to them because there was no way of bringing them back to life. As science progresses, we are pushing back those boundaries, and we have this land, this sort of intermittent period where the cells in the body are damaged, but not sufficiently, such that if you can restart the heart, you can bring people back from death. And it's important to understand what happens at that time. So at the very least, what we've come to understand is that death is a pleasant experience for the majority of people, maybe not, say, for specific cases, let's say, of traumatic suicide. But for the majority of us, when we go through death, it is a pleasant experience. Now, does it mean that it's the brain switching off in a very pleasant, programmed way? Does it mean that consciousness may somehow continue? We don't know, but those are the key questions that need to be addressed.
Well, it's really interesting.
It's fascinating, actually. I think we were both a little speechless there for a second, which is rare for the two of us.
No, we were near death.
we were near death. But where are you in the? Where are you in this? This is an 18-month study, correct? Where are you on that continuum?
Well, as you can imagine, this is a big project, and the reason why it has to be big is that most people who have a cardiac arrest, by definition, they've died, and you know, most people, we cannot bring them back to life. So it's a very difficult, tricky subject to study. So we have to try to recruit about 1,500 patients who survived a cardiac arrest, which means that we'll be starting out with about 15,000 cases of actual events. And of those, we might get about 100 so-called out-of-body experiences.
Well, one thing is certain, you're going to be changing the definition of what it means to die. I mean, it sounds like that's absolutely clear.
I think it's important scientifically to think, because what really matters is what happens to, if I'm dying, what matters is what's happening to me as a person, not what my cells are doing. And the question is, at what point does consciousness cease functioning? That's what we're trying to define. Because just to touch, I know time is very brief, you know, there are drugs that may be developed in the future that might even delay the process of cell death. And it may be that somebody might be hovering in that period for hours or days. And so we need to know what they will experience. I was just going to say, I know that, again, radio is very limited, but if anyone's interested, we announced this study at the United Nations here in New York, and they can go to a website, mindbodysymposium.com, and we have interviews and all the details of the study that explains, for example, we're using sophisticated brain technology to study what happens to brain precisely in each individual, how we will progress with the study if we get positive results, how we will progress if we get negative results. There's a whole plan. But ultimately,
and I certainly hope that you will let us check in with you as you go along on this journey to find out about death. Dr. Sam Parnia, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Sam Parnia is an expert in the field of consciousness during clinical death, and he is leading this study into what happens between when we are unconscious and when we actually die. Interesting, huh?
Yeah, I'm just sitting here wondering, you know, about my own experience. I was in a car accident a long time ago. It's interesting to think about, actually, quite interesting to think about. But, you know, let's not dwell on death, okay? It's the takeaway.
It's the takeaway.